Jimmy Creech has done passionate work for an inclusive United Methodist Church that didn't begin with officiating at that same-sex union in 1998 that cost him his status as a minister, and it certainly didn't end with that event either, not by a long shot. As co-founder of the organization Faith in America, Jimmy has continued his activism, traveling the country and speaking about the urgency of excluding no one from the message of a loving and welcoming God. After years of seeming intransigence on the issue of recognizing same-sex couples, the United Methodist Church has just seen one bishop take a decisive step in a positive direction, and the one person I wanted to talk to immediately was Jimmy Creech, and thankfully, he found time to be with us today. Jimmy, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Weldon. It's wonderful to be back with you.
For listeners who may not have heard about Bishop Martin McLee's action, I wish you would just summarize what the excitement about it is.
Well, the Reverend Dr. Thomas Ogletree celebrated a wedding for his son and his son's spouse. It's the same-gender wedding back in the fall of last year. And charges were brought against Dr. Ogletree. And there was actually a trial scheduled for earlier this year. Bishop Ives was the presiding bishop for the presiding for the trial, and he decided to postpone the trial, and with the hope that there could be what is called in our tradition a just resolution between the church and Dr. Ogletree, rather than there being a trial. This week it was announced that a just resolution had been reached between the church, the United Methodist Church, and Dr. Ogletree, and so there would be no trial. Following that was the announcement by Dr. Ogletree's bishop, Bishop Martin McLee, mm-hmm. that he would, from now on, not put clergy on trial for conducting same-gender weddings, even though there is a law within the United Methodist Church prohibiting clergy from doing so. It was a momentous and historic decision, I think a courageous and prophetic one on the part of Bishop McLee. It was also the just resolution itself was wonderful because it allowed a process to move forward without a clergy person being put on trial and having the potential of having his credentials taken from him.
Jimmy, how then does this impact other pending court trials?
It really does not. Not officially. It only applies to this particular trial. As far as I'm aware, there are no outstanding charges against other clergy for conducting same-gender weddings. Now, there may be a process, or there may be something in the process where a charge might be brought, but mm-hmm. at this point, I don't think there's an outstanding charge. So it doesn't impact any judicial process that's in place.
Mm-hmm.
There are clergy who have conducted very publicly same-gender weddings
mm-hmm.
and are likely to have charges brought against them. But those clergy are in other annual conferences around the country, and the bishops who preside over those annual conferences may not follow Bishop McLee's example.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, actually, whether or not there's any inevitability that other bishops will follow Bishop McLee, or whether in some instances it will harden someone else's attitude and they'll say, well, we're sure going to keep doing this.
Well, I think that's accurate, actually. I think the Council of Bishops within the United Methodist Church are divided on whether they are supportive of clergy who conduct same-gender marriages or not. Mm-hmm. And so I think there are a number of bishops who are really becoming emboldened mm-hmm. to take a stand against putting clergy on trial. And so there will be some who will very strongly support Bishop McLee.
Yes.
There will be others who strongly disagree. And in the South, the southeastern part of the United States, you know, there's a strong opposition to same-gender marriage and, right. and to really including same-gender loving people. In the Northeast and on the West Coast, there's a much greater openness to including same-gender loving people. And so there is a regional factor here.
You would be interested to know, if you didn't hear it, last week on State of Belief Radio, I interviewed Bishop Minerva Carcano in Los Angeles.
Oh, wonderful.
She's invited the Reverend Frank Schaefer out for a visit, who was convicted in Pennsylvania, to come to California. It was a wonderful interview. And, I mean, why can't you reproduce her a whole bunch of times?
If we could, I would certainly do whatever I could to do that. But there are some others. She is one. There are some others who are beginning to take a strong stand. I think that there are bishops who recognize that a great deal of harm is being done to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people by the policies and actions of the United Methodist Church, particularly when pastors are put on trial for affirming and supporting the loving relationships of same-gender couples. And these bishops are no longer going to sort of stay hidden in the closet of the council. Mm-hmm. They're going to take a step out, and they're going to be leaders, and they're going to do things like Bishop McLee has done. Bishop McLee has essentially opened up a process of dialogue and communication and conversation that a trial cuts off. A trial doesn't produce anything except punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no resolution in a trial. It's simply an act of punishment. With Frank Schaefer being the prime example just most recently.
Right.
And so I hope that Bishop McLee's example will lead others who are not perhaps, ready to step out and take a stand against the policies of the church, but are willing to be in dialogue. I hope that there are some bishops who will follow that example.
Jimmy, let me be personal for a moment. You've been fighting this battle for so many years. How does it make you feel to see finally a glimmer of hope?
Well, it's exciting. I can't tell you. You know, I just recently realized how long it has been since my first trial, and that was in 1998. It's been 16 years. It's hard to believe. And, you know, what I sometimes think, why has it taken so long for someone to take the position that Bishop McLee has taken? The rule against clergy conducting same-gender weddings is no more wrong today than it was when it was passed in 1996. It's always been wrong. It's always been a harmful and destructive law. Why has it taken so long? On the other hand, I celebrate the fact that finally it's happening. And I think it's happening now because we have, I think 17 states now where marriage equality is either provided or recognized. And same-gender couples are stepping forward, and they are very publicly wanting to, join themselves together in marriage. And they want to do it in the context of their faith and their religious community, and clergy can no longer say, I just can't do a union ceremony for you. This is, this is something else. This is a legal marriage, legal recognition, a legal commitment, and clergy are, I think, being moved now to say, this is a part of what I'm called to do. This is a part of my ministry, and they can't turn their back on it any longer. And I think the bishops are beginning to recognize that. And the bishops themselves, like Bishop Talbert, who has conducted a same-gender, actually union, it was not a legal marriage, but a same-gender union, which I considered equivalent to a legal marriage. But he stepped out and he took that leadership. I think the time has changed, the context has changed, and the reason it has is because of the courage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people who've been willing to let their families, their friends, their colleagues, their, you know, their church members know who they are and understand the integrity and dignity of the life they live together, in, singles and as and in married and committed couples.
Jimmy, do you remember the very first time the issue of homosexuality came up in your ministry?
Specifically, I do. Yes, it was a Wednesday morning in 1984. I think it was in May. It was just after news had been published in the local newspaper that the United Methodist Church had passed a new rule saying that, and this is the language of the church, self-avowed practicing homosexuals could not be ordained or appointed within the United Methodist Church from now on. And a member of the congregation I'd known for 3 years came into me with great agony, crying and pouring his heart out to me to tell me he was leaving the church. He was in his late 40s. He'd been a member of the Methodist Church. He joined it when it was still the Methodist Church and, you know, later became the United Methodist Church. He had been a member all of his life, and he was leaving. And he came out to me at that point. He was the first person who ever self-identified as gay to me and began to tell me what it was like to be gay in the church and in society and how harmful and painful it was to be told by his church that he, because of whom he loves, was less moral, less human, had less integrity and dignity than those, you know, who are not gay. And it was because of the integrity and dignity that he had, and I knew him to have for over 3 years, that compelled me to reexamine my own beliefs about homosexuality, and then challenge, or then study the church's position and then begin to challenge it. He made the difference in my life, and I think other lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people who have the courage to let themselves be known make the same difference in the lives of others.
I really do thank you for sharing that. Now, how would you contrast that moment with the present one?
Well, I wish one of the things I'll say is that I refer to my friend as Adam. He was the first man to come out to me as a gay man. It's not his real name, but he said to me once. I began to get into some conflicts and have some controversy around my ministry a few years later because of my advocacy, very public advocacy for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. And he called me up one day to apologize for coming out to me because he knew that that was the moment that had changed my life and my ministry, and I became a strong advocate. And he pledged to me that when he could retire, he was a professional person, educator, he could not come out publicly. He said, when I retire, I'm going to become a gay rights advocate, because I want to make this world better and safer for my sisters and brothers who are lesbian and gay. He died a year later of a heart attack. And I really wish Adam could be here today to know about marriage equality being a reality around this country, that the Supreme Court has ruled that that same gender couples cannot be denied their rights, that federal courts around the country are saying constitutional amendments denying same-gender couples their rights are unconstitutional. I just wish Adam could be here. It's a new day. It's a different day. There's still much more work to be done, but there's certainly reason to feel confident that one day lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people will be fully accepted, not only in the church, but in society. Affirmed and celebrated as the people of integrity and dignity that they are.
Do you have any sense what's next for the Methodist Church on this issue?
Well, I think more and more clergy are going to to very publicly conduct weddings for same-gender couples. It's going to put the church, it's going to create a situation where the church is going to have to decide, the leadership of the church, you know, are we just going to destroy ourselves by putting everybody on trial and creating really bad public relations? Mm-hmm. I mean, this really makes the church look bad. Or are we going to recognize that there are differences of opinion and that people of conscience have to act on their conscience? They cannot be coerced by fear and the threat of trials. I think the church is going to find some way to accommodate clergy who act on conscience, recognizing the integrity and dignity of same-gender couples when they conduct their weddings. There are other very negative. There's other negative language in our mm-hmm. tradition that does harm to gay and lesbian people. But marriage affirms that relationship as a sacred and holy relationship between two people. And for clergy to be able to celebrate that and affirm it is a way of overcoming and setting aside all this negative tradition that we have. I don't think our General Conference is going to change these laws very soon. We have a very difficult time, a very difficult challenge to do that. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that the leadership is going to have to find a way to say, okay, we're just not going to put people on trial for being good pastors, for having conscience, for doing what they believe truly is, you know, the mm-hmm. their call to ministry and what is consistent with the gospel. I think that's going to have to happen.
Jimmy, you know certainly that your message has been a part of what's helped change things, and I'm going to ask you a question that I hope nobody ever asks me. you've had a lifetime to distill your message of faithful inclusivity, and I really only have about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left. But would you take those minutes and tell us why the struggle has been so important to you and what the essence of your message is?
Well, when Adam came out to me, I've always understood my call to ministry to be to help people overcome whatever damages them spiritually, whatever causes them to doubt God's love for them, to be unable to love another and to really be unable to love themselves. I discovered when Adam came out to me that my church was causing lesbian and gay people to really hate God, or to believe that God hates them, to hate themselves, and to know that they could never live in a loving relationship and be open about it. And so this was contrary to what I understood my call to ministry to be. So I didn't feel I had a choice. I felt compelled to begin to challenge my church's teachings and also the social and cultural attitudes toward lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, because it was my call to ministry. It was what I understood I was to do as a minister. It was to help lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people know that they are loved by God, that they should love themselves and hold themselves in high esteem, and they have the freedom, and not only the freedom, but the gift to be able to love another and to live in a committed relationship if they find someone and so choose to do that. That has been my understanding of ministry, and it's been what I've been passionate about doing all these years.
Jimmy Creech is a pioneer of inclusivity in the United Methodist Church, having paid the price of his ordained ministry for his convictions, Since 1999, he's led the organization Faith in America and speaks widely on issues of faith and justice. All of you who are listening, you would do well to read Jimmy's autobiographical book titled Adam's Gift. He's just talked about who Adam was. Adam's Gift, a memoir of a pastor's calling to defy the church's persecution of lesbians and gays. Jimmy Creech, you were able to see homosexual persons as a gift to be nurtured and treasured long before most other religious leaders, and we treasure your continued ministry. I thank you, as I do always, for you coming to State of Belief Radio and sharing your thoughts and message with us. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you so much, Welton. Blessings on you.